Election 2020 is in the books, though we're still waiting to see who won the White House. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Donald Trump took the Sunshine State, and part of that could be how well he did with Latinos in Miami-Dade. In Miami, we have a new mayor.
I am extremely humbled and proud to be the first woman mayor of Miami-Dade County.
Two congressional seats have flipped Republican.
I'm a former paramedic and a firefighter and a fire chief, city manager, and so I have a lot of experience dealing with emergencies, especially dealing with medical emergencies.
Floridians also said yes to raising the minimum wage. Ahead on today's program, we're going to hear from some of the winners. We'll also look at how things went down around South Florida. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us on this post-election program. Well, election night 2020 is in the books, but the election season is far from over. It's still unclear who the president-elect will be as counting continues in a number of key battleground states, as you've been hearing in the news. Florida was called by the Associated Press for President Trump, although he won the state by only a 3% margin, as we always said. Florida's close, always very close. There were a number of close congressional, state senate, and commission races across our four counties. So we're going to start today by speaking with some of the winners and what last night's results tell us about Florida's political future. Joining me first is Democratic Congressman Ted Deutsch, representing Florida's 22nd District, which includes Broward and Palm Beach counties. Congressman Deutsch, thank you so much. Congratulations on the victory.
Thanks very much. It's great to be with you.
So Broward County, again, showing a strong support for Democrats, but Republicans didn't make a surge in Miami-Dade. What do you make of last night's results?
Well, listen, Florida is, as you point out, is always close. I lost two very good, talented, capable colleagues from the House last night because of what happened in Miami-Dade County. But going forward, we're going to have to look to respect the outcome of this election. And as disappointed as I am in those races, I'll look forward to serving with the new members, just as I know everyone who voted for Donald Trump in Florida, a state that he won, will respect the outcome if, as it looks, Joe Biden is going to be the next president of the United States.
Well, again, we're still waiting for that. So obviously that'll be reported once we know. But what do you make of this, though? When you look at South Florida, still blue, but that shade of blue starting to switch a little bit, it seems.
Oh, listen, I think the outcome in the numbers in Palm Beach and Broward especially were stronger, were as strong as they've ever been for Democrats. And in Miami-Dade, look, there'll be lots of time to analyze exactly what happened here, but I'm not about to draw conclusions about the future of Florida from the outcome of the election in one county in South Florida. Joe Biden did exceedingly well in not just Broward and Palm Beach, but in other counties all around the state. So we'll have time to figure out what happened there. But I'm very bullish on the future and look forward to the from a political standpoint, absolutely look forward to the 2022 midterm elections.
This was challenging also because it's a pandemic. And so there's a lot of campaigning that went on that had to be very different. For you, what was that strategy and how did you do it?
Well, it was a really unique time. And we did what I think so many others did. We had an awful lot of Zoom meetings. We met virtually. We did things, we did more online. We had more telephone conversations. That's just the environment that we were in. And that made it challenging. And I think as we look ahead and get back, once we get through this pandemic, and hopefully we'll have some greater leadership from the top in Tallahassee as we go forward after this election, as we get through this, there'll be a better opportunity to go out and interact with people in person, which I think is obviously a real key. And I think that's one of the things that that hurt us in Miami-Dade County, was not being able to do that.
You know, when I look real quickly, here's the thing. You look at how the two sides handled this election, especially in the last couple of months, and the Republicans were holding rallies. And whether people were wearing masks or not, I mean, they were in some cases, in a lot of cases, no. But they were holding rallies where Democrats were doing things, trying to be as careful as possible. Do you think that hurt the Democrats, like in some of those races, like the congressional races, the two House seats you lost in Miami-Dade?
Do I think that it hurt that?
Not having that those rallies, not having big gatherings.
Right, right. No, I don't think that it hurt to actually do things in a way to prevent the spread of a virus during a pandemic. I wouldn't go back and change things. We've seen the studies already about these rallies all around the country that have led to significant spikes in the number of cases. And frankly, the reason that we're sitting right at this moment where Joe Biden looks like he's going to win Wisconsin and Michigan and be in a position to move forward to take the White House is because of the way people reacted to those sorts of rallies all around the country. So I don't have any regrets about that.
Let me finish with this. We're still waiting to see the Democrats are closer to the 218 they need to keep the House, but not by much, and it's a tight race in the Senate. I don't know if you've heard anything. What are you hearing about, you know, really the confidence Democrats have on taking one of the chambers at least?
I'm very confident that we're going to hold on to control. There'll be Democratic control of the House. Not quite as large a margin, but I am confident that we'll be able to continue to move forward with an agenda that actually is popular all across Florida and in Florida, passing measures to make our streets safer from gun violence, addressing climate change, protecting our health care. Those continue to be the right policies. And at this point, anyway, it looks like they're going to go to a Senate where, if he continues on as leader, Mitch McConnell will continue to block them. And I think those are the issues that will be on the ballot as we head into the next election in 2022.
All right, we're already talking about 2022. We haven't finished this one yet. Congressman Ted Deutsch, representing Florida's 22nd District, thank you so much again, sir.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
All right, I want to turn over now to another victor. He was talking about two House seats that flipped. Let's talk about one of them. It's the Florida's 27th District. Congresswoman-elect Maria Elvira Salazar won that one, beating Donna Shalala. Congresswoman-elect Salazar, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. My pleasure.
I mean, first of all, congratulations on the race. I mean, look, this is one where Donna Shalala, a very popular candidate, a lot of folks were saying that, you know, she had the advantage. What was the strategy? How did you win?
Well, the only strategy was to get to know the community. You know, I was born and raised in Miami. I know them well. And I just reached out to all of them. Specifically during the pandemic, I was out there giving food to the seniors and to the people who had less means to go and buy some food at the supermarket because they had lost their jobs. So I went out and I gave thousands and thousands of hot meals. And I think people remember that. And on top of that, this change of words from Donna Shalala talking about socialism and saying that she was a pragmatic socialist and then she was not a pragmatic socialist. You know, the thing with a socialism, you cannot play around with that word, period. Because for us, that's the inferno. That's like playing with acid.
You're saying us, and you're saying Latinos in South Florida.
Absolutely. My community, District Number 27, which I believe is the ultimate melting pot in this country. We have everybody. We have the blacks. We have the whites. We have the Hispanics. We have the non-Cuban Hispanics. We have the Haitians. We have the Central Americans. And we all live in peace, and we all want the same thing, which is prosperity, love this country, stay here, pay our taxes, raise our kids, and be free, and not socialism. So that is the key. And besides, it's a combination of, I would say, that knowing the community, being present in the community, not enriching yourself, because as you know, Ms. Shalala was caught breaking federal law and being present.
Let me jump in real quick. I want to ask you about your background. You have a background as a journalist, so not a lot in politics. How do you take that experience and now go into office?
oh my God, it's a great experience because I'm not going to be a politician. I'm going to be a public servant. And I'm going to be asking the tough questions for the benefit of my district. And I'm going to be able to take in information, analyze it, and vote when it's good for my people and vote against when it's not good for my people.
You know,
because
I'm
only here, tell me.
There are a lot of people who go in with that. They go in, they're not politicians, but they become politicians. How do you avoid that?
How am I going? Well, you know, I am 59 years old. I have been I've been a journalist for 35. I have interviewed many politicians, and so I know how they smell and how they look like. And you know, I do not want to become one, because then I will be going against my own principles and values. And you need to stay vertically speaking, ideologically correct, and that's my plan. And you know, something else, I will tell my constituents the way I see it all the time. And I'm going to be open for them to come in into my congressional office. I've been talking to everybody. But look, I started well. I haven't looked at the numbers yet, but everything indicates that around 20% of the Hispanic Democrats voted for me. And that's an award.
Two big things that you're probably going to have to deal with immediately. One, of course, economic stimulus. Do you support another round of economic stimulus?
You know, for me, the stimulus, I have to look in and I have to see. But you know what's the number one stimulus that was another campaign promise that I'm about to fulfill. I'm going to go now into a meeting and figure out how I'm going to be putting this together very quickly, which is going to be an employment division. There are hundreds of millions of dollars available right now without a new stimulus bill that is available for my people. People that want to be retrained, the money is there. Small business owners that want to get either a loan or be partners with the federal government, those opportunities are out there now. And I can access and tap into them without waiting for Washington to vote on something
So you're saying there's money that there's now, but again, we don't know how long this pandemic's going to take before there's a vaccine. Would you support another stimulus or no?
Listen, if I see that the numbers show, and once I get to Washington, I'll be very happy to answer this question once I'm there and I see the numbers. But if I see that the average family in my district needs another $1,200 and $500 per child, and that money is available without waste, and is just as a temporary help, I will definitely vote in favor of helping my people. It's just help. I don't want to give handouts. I just want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to get up back on their feet, economically speaking, and then go to work.
One last thing I wanted to ask you. This, of course, a big part of the campaign for the presidency. Yes. Your area, your district, one of the highest proportions of enrollees in the ACA. Is it something that you would support, or is it something you want to see replaced?
Well, I've answered that before, and the answer is that right now, all we have is Obamacare, right? That's all we have. So we need to keep that until we have something better. So we gotta do something, the Republicans and the Democrats, and come together and sit at the table and figure out a better plan, which I would believe that needs some competition, some transparency. Big Pharma needs to be looked at. We need to create better plans, cheaper plans, and for everybody. And how do you do that? With the forces of competition. You like your Obamacare, you keep it. But in the meantime, we've got to give you another option that's cheaper. What do you think? That's what's common sense, which is the least common of all senses for politicians.
Well, all right. It's something that we could talk about because, again, you are Congresswoman-elect Maria Elvira Salazar.
And invite me to your show. I want to have a very close and direct communication with the news organizations. Remember that I paid my rent by doing what you're doing right now.
You know, listen, the door's always open. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Indeed. We're all Americans, regardless of the party. We're here to save this country for the future of our children.
Congresswoman-elect, I really appreciate the time. Thanks again.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
All right. Again, she is the winner in Florida's 27th district. All right. I'm going to stay in Miami-Dade, and I'm going to turn over now to local elections, and we have in Miami-Dade a new mayor. Daniela Levine Cava, Miami-Dade County's first elected woman mayor, and first Jewish mayor, by the way, Mayor-elect, congratulations. Welcome to the program.
It's really an honor to be with you. Thank you so much.
For you, what does it mean to be the first female and also first Jewish mayor in Miami-Dade?
We're in really troubling times. People are anxious. They're nervous. What's going to happen with our economy, with our health? I think this is a great time for a woman to step up. Doesn't mean only a woman can lead in trying times, but I think the woman's touch, compassion, collaboration, courage are all very critical. I think people are looking to me to be the healer in chief, as someone who is going to really look out for everybody's well-being. They believe that I will and that I can, and that's why they elected me.
It's always interesting when you look at Miami politics, okay? And again, when you look at what happened in last night's election, Biden does win, but again, the Latin vote started skewing a lot more Trump this past election. You won, but again, two House seats flipped back to Republican. It's a very unique area. So you're calling yourself a healer in chief. How will you do that considering the divide that you have here, which is very stark?
So I have had really incredible support across the aisle. I have people who voted for me who support Trump, people who support Biden, people maybe that were unenthusiastic. I'd be actually interested to know how many voted for me that didn't even vote for the president, because I think we were able to communicate through a year and a half campaign, my 6 years in office, my 40 years serving the community, that I'm the real deal, that I do really care about our communities, that I am focused on how to improve everyone's quality of life, and especially during these troubling times, that I am the person that they could most trust to build it back better.
What's your first priority once you take office?
We do need to appoint a chief medical officer. I've promised that on the campaign trail, and that will be a person who will guide me every day on facts and science to make sure that we're doing it right. And I'll be calling together a recovery task force of people who can help us with the economic issues. We've got our small business community, we have hospitality, our real estate, our financial sector, our public sector, as well as future investments in infrastructure and innovation. So, we're still a very desirable place for businesses to locate, and there's a lot of that going on right now. And we want to plug that and rebuild our hospitality industry as well, because we are open for business, taking precautions, and we are still paradise.
We've talked about this before. Obviously, your predecessor, Carlos Jimenez, had put in executive orders when dealing with the pandemic. How are you going to approach those? You're going to keep those in place? You're looking to set up new ones?
I need to review them in detail. Some of them, of course, were invalidated by the governor's actions. We need to talk to the governor. We need to see what's on the governor's mind, as unfortunately cases do increase. But we know that the precautions that people take are all important. And that's why, again, I'll have a chief medical officer.
And again, being the first female mayor, again, I congratulate you on that. The other thing, though, is when you look at, again, the demographics of your area and what we saw in this past election, do you think that it's about reaching out to the other side and trying to build that communication? Because, again, as I said,
absolutely,
it's very stark, the separation.
Yes.
And it got very ugly.
Completely agree with your point. And you did also ask about my being the first Jewish mayor. So we had a Vision 2020 task force to help set some priorities for the future and guidance. And one of the members is Rabbi Mitch Sheffetz. And he said to us on the call that it was about bridge building, that was task number one. I completely agree with him. I've spoken already to many of my colleagues across the aisle, both on the commission and in state and local offices, because we all have to work together. I'm very hopeful that once this presidential matter is settled, that we'll move on and focus on the issues here at home.
She is Miami-Dade Mayor-elect Daniela Levine Cava. Mayor-elect, congratulations. Thank you so much for the time. We'll be talking again soon.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
All right. And now I want to move over one more winner. And we reached out to a lot of people. Some folks said they would be on and they backtracked, and we never heard from some others. But we're always going to make the effort to try to get as many people on. And we want to hear from all sides in this election. I want to go now to Congresswoman Lois Frankel. She won her fifth term representing District 21. That is President Donald Trump's home district. Congresswoman Frankel, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So you won handedly, but at the same time, you also had an opponent who was very controversial. Tell me a little bit about what was different in this election compared to the other ones.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for asking me. Thank you for having me on your show today. But I try to keep a positive message no matter who I'm up against, and that's what we really did. We try to focus on what's important to our constituents. And so rather than me even responding to my opponent, we responded to the crises of our community right now, which is, number one, obviously the pandemic and getting COVID under control, and number two, making sure that people have access to affordable quality health care. It's never been more important as now. And look, there's some other things. Obviously, Florida is very vulnerable to climate change, and that's something we have to address. And I have a very, very big constituency that depend on Medicare and Social Security, making sure that that stays secure. And we saw after the George Floyd killing, really that brutal murder, and really clamor for social justice in our country and in our community, that's also top on the list. So I try to focus on the issues, not on the personalities. This was, to me, not going to be about who could bully each other, you know, in the kindergarten playground.
Okay. Interesting way to look at it. Let's look at a couple of the priorities. One, and I brought this up actually just a few moments ago, which is looking at, the economy as we are facing right now, especially in Florida, very difficult. A lot of people still out of work as we're still battling with this pandemic. Are there conversations of, again, possibly more economic stimulus? Do you see that as a need?
Well, I see that as a must. And first, the best economic stimulus will be to get COVID under control. And that is to make sure we have reliable, quick testing, contact tracing, and make sure people are following CDC guidelines of wearing the mask and social distancing and washing their hands. That cannot be emphasized enough. Obviously, continuing the research for therapeutics and making sure that we're ready to get vaccines out. That's going to be the best way to eventually get back to a normal economy. In the meantime, there are millions of people in this country out of work, including in the state of Florida. People are suffering. They can't pay their rent or their mortgage. People are not able to put food on the table or pay any of their bills. So we must get money back to our constituents as
right.
soon as possible, directly into their pockets, beef up the unemployment insurance payments now, and help small businesses. Businesses are the backbone of our country. They need help now.
Let me jump in with one last one. You are the co-chair of the Democratic Women's Caucus. What are the top women issues that you want to tackle?
Well, I would just say right now, if you take a look at what's happened during the pandemic, it's actually women who have been, when you say on the short end of the stick, women have been disproportionately affected by this. More women are out of work. Our childcare facilities have been decimated by COVID. And women are being threatened by the loss of the Affordable Care Act, where all of a sudden we're faced with becoming pre-existing conditions again, plus the threat always by Republicans to keep obstacles in place to prevent lawful and safe abortion.
Yeah.
Lots of issues. So you will see from the Women's Caucus, right, the priority, of course, is going to be to get this pandemic under control and make sure that women have access to the health care that they need.
Wonderful. Congresswoman Lois Frankel, again, winning her fifth term representing District 21. Congresswoman Frankel, really appreciate the time. Congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
And again, we have reached out to a lot of the winners. Hopefully we will get them in the days to come. Lots to talk about in this election. Still, the count continues as we wait to see which side wins the Senate, the House, and, of course, who wins the White House. Well, still to come, we'll take a closer look at what the election tells us about the state legislature and the amendments you voted on. That coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, aside from the presidential race, I mean, there are a lot of down-ballot races, constitutional amendments, school board seats, a lot of local stuff that we voted on. The state is going to have a new minimum wage. Two congressional seats have flipped, and Latino voter turnout for Republicans in particular exceeded expectations. We have a number of our reporters to tell you about the key stories that they've been following. And joining us first in Miami-Dade, we have reporters Danny Rivero and Tim Padgett. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I hope you got rest. I hope you're rested after last night.
I am.
Tim, let me start with you. We just spoke with Congresswoman-elect Salazar. How did she do it? How did she pull that off?
Well, I think she plugged into the Republican strategy as effectively as any Republican candidate did in Miami-Dade County, and that strategy being to brand Joe Biden and the Democrats, and particularly her Democratic rival, Nana Shalala, as socialist. I mean, that was the fundamental strategy that the Republican Party took here with particularly Latinos in Miami-Dade County in South Florida, and it worked. And, you know, she was criticized by some for, for taking this sort of McCarthyite, you know, approach, this sort of Red Scare approach to her campaigning, but it obviously paid off for her because a lot of Latino voters, particularly Cubans, Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, did, I think, begin to sign on to this message that was being conveyed in her ads that Shalala was a socialist.
So, Danny, the other big race, of course, was Donna Shalala losing. It was Debbie McCarso Powell losing to Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez. How did he pull it off? What was the key to victory?
Right. So, I mean, largely along the lines of what Maria Elvira Salazar did in the neighboring district. I mean, there was an across-the-board swell of Republican support in South Florida, and anyone that was on the ticket it looks like they benefited from that surge, and Mayor Jimenez in his race, he and also Salazar actually for that matter they did the double thing where they branded their opponents as overly partisan radicals, while also painting themselves as the moderate kind of independent voices. I mean, we just heard Salazar say, if you like Obamacare, you can keep it. That's not the GOP party line. The Mayor Jimenez in his race, he basically ran on the ticket saying, look, I am a nonpartisan mayor of a major city. I'm a problem solver, and I'm not going to be a partisan when I go to Washington. And so that double strategy of branding the other side as some kind of a radical and saying I'm actually the moderate, it looks like that paid off.
You know what, did any of these candidates tie themselves into the president, or were they trying to separate themselves from the president, Tim?
Well, Elvira Salazar tried to distance herself from Trump in many ways. I think a lot of her rhetoric was, well, okay, the guy's his rhetoric with his immigration policy, Danny just pointed, try to connect herself more effectively to, Obama policies, Obamacare, et cetera.
All right, Tim, let me jump in. I think we're losing your line. It's coming in and out. Let's see if we can reconnect just real quickly. Danny, while we do that, state legislature, let's take a look at anything that happened on the state level. Anything surprising?
Right, yeah. So Democrats came into this cycle hoping to pick up potentially a couple seats, maybe in the Florida House and the Florida Senate. Where it stands now, it looks like five seats are going to be lost for Democrats in the Florida House. including the seat held by Democrat Cindy Polo up in Hialeah and Miramar. You know, she was someone that was seen as potentially a rising star in Florida politics for Democrats, and she was voted out after just one term. And on the Senate side, there was a couple seats that Democrats were really targeting. One of the main ones was Senate District 39, which is from South Dade all the way down to Key West. Democrats are hoping to pick that up. Republican Ana Maria Rodriguez won that pretty handily, so they weren't able to get that. And then there's Senate District 37 in the city of Miami. There's just a 21 vote spread over that. So Republican Ileana Garcia is 21 votes ahead at the last count I checked over incumbent Democrat Jose Javier Rodriguez. So that looks like it's headed to recount territory. I actually talked with Gary Farmer. He's the head of the Senate Victory, the Democratic effort to take some seats, and he told me just a couple minutes ago that they're still tracking down about 360 ballots that they hope can be cured and maybe overcome that 21 vote deficit. And that would be a loss of one seat in the Senate for Democrats if they don't pull that off.
Tim, coming back to you, look, we don't know yet who is going to take the White House, but after what we saw in this election, what do you think is going to happen by the midterm and then again, 4 years from now, when it comes to the Latino vote and how the parties are going to approach the Latino vote in Miami-Dade?
Well, the Democrats have to figure out how to engage the Latino vote, at least in
yep.
South Florida. Can you hear me now, Lewis?
Yeah, go ahead. We're good.
Okay. No, I think the Democratic Party learn as a lot. The Democrat Party has got to figure out a ground game with Latinos in South Florida, which they really do not have right now.
Right.
Job of engaging Latino voters, particularly Cubans, also Venezuelans, Colombians, Nicaraguans, many of whom shifted to the Republican Party in this election cycle, and they have got to figure out a message for Latinos.
It's all about the messaging, and the messaging was very clear in this election. But that's for years to come. We'll take a look at that when that happens. The Democrats did win South Florida, but Trump did win Florida by much bigger margins than he did against Hillary Clinton. Again, Danny Rivero, WLRN's Danny Rivero, and Tim Padgett joining us. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Get some much-needed rest. You deserve it. All right, I want to turn over now to look at what happened in Palm Beach County and Broward County. Let's go to our Palm Beach County reporter, Wilkin Brutus, and our Broward County reporter, Katie Switalski-Munoz. Wilkin, Katie, welcome to the program. Hope you guys are feeling well.
Yes, thanks for having us.
All right, and we're going to get Katie on the line here. Wilkin, let me start with you. We spoke with Congresswoman Frankel. That race, really not much of a race.
Yeah. Frankel won nearly 60% of the vote. She defeated Laura Loomer, who is a far-right political newcomer who was endorsed by Representative Matt Gaetz and Roger Stone. Loomer actually snatched, 39% of the vote, which is still significant for a far-right conservative newcomer in a heavily Democratic district. But Frankel, again, she won 60% of the vote. She ran on her record supporting environmental issues, health care, Medicare, and Social Security. Those are the local issues that seem to have mattered for Palm Beach County voters.
All right, Katie, I believe we have you now on the line. Katie, a couple of big races in Broward County. First of all, Fort Lauderdale Mayor Dean Trantalis won re-election.
Hi, Lewis. Yes, Dean Trantalis, who first took office as mayor in spring of 2018, he has been reelected, and his candidate, Kenneth Cooper, who lost, had run on a campaign that really revolved quite heavily around the sewage spills that really started in earnest last December and ran through February. And so Dean Trantalis was really running on a platform of, I can keep the fixes that we've started in motion, and managed to win that race.
And of course, the sheriff's race, Gregory Tony wins a re-election. Was it really close? It wasn't even close, though.
Not this time around. No, Sheriff Tony faced a much more difficult primary race against former Sheriff Scott Israel, who he had been appointed to replace, in the aftermath of the Parkland school shooting. And this time around, it's not too much of a surprise because Broward is such a Democratic stronghold in Florida, but Sheriff Tony took home more than 63% of the vote this time around, which, I mean, after the brutal campaign that he went through is still a feat.
Yeah. Wilkin, voter turnout in Palm Beach County. I mean, we saw records pretty much around the state. It's pretty much the same in Palm Beach County, right?
Yes. Small caveat. After polls closed, Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections, Wendy Satora-Link, said it's not going to be a record turnout in the county. She said turnout is hovering around 76%, which is significant by any margin. But she was told that in 1992, the county saw an 85% turnout. And so that was quite surprising for folks who were at the tabulation centers to hear that.
All right. Well, you know what? If anything, just to say, it's just good that we got through the election. No hitches. Everything's fine. Everything's okay here in South Florida. Welcome, Brutus. Katie Swatowski-Munoz, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
All right, and you guys get some rest as well. Now, let's head down to the southernmost bureau in Key West with WLRN reporter Nan Klinginer. Nan, all right, lots going on down in the Keys. Let's talk about cruise ships because that was really the big thing. It seems like what you said happened. The three cruise ship charters passed.
They did, and they all passed by a margin of at least 60%, more than 60%. So, yeah, we have an amended charter now.
All right. Now, we'll talk about what that means in a second here, but we did hear from Christopher Ellis, who owns a bike tour company in Key West. Let's take a listen.
And then people are going to start saying, how come these restaurants are closing? How come these shops are closing? How come it takes me 20 minutes to get a drink when I go out to a place for lunch? And it's going to make Key West less desirable, not more desirable.
All right. So obviously he's not for it. It makes less desirable. Most people don't feel that way, though.
Right, right. And I got a text from Christopher this morning telling me that he had basically given notice to all 13 of his employees this morning. So they're not all full-time. But
yeah. So, again, the implications of this is now what? Basically, we're just saying fewer ships, fewer people coming off those ships.
Correct. Smaller ships, too. It limits them in size. They can have a capacity to carry no more than 1,300 people.
Are we expecting lawsuits?
Yes, we are. In fact, there is already a lawsuit in circuit court down here that the owners of Pier B, which is the privately owned cruise ship berth behind the Margaritaville Resort right downtown on the harbor, had filed. They wanted to get the questions off the ballot, and that didn't happen. That was rejected. But the judge is still moving along with discovery and motions and wanted to set it to a very speedy trial if these questions passed. At this point, the cruise lines just announced yesterday that they're voluntarily extending the no sale through the end of the year. So that takes, you know, the time element a little bit off.
Yeah.
But I think we will see this in a courtroom very soon.
All right. I do want to ask you about, there is a county commission seat that's going to be recounted. This is Heather Carruthers versus Eddie Martinez, District 3. Part of it represents Key West. What's happening there?
Yeah, part of it does represent Key West, but county commission seats are all elected countywide. So we don't have single-member districts for the county commission here. And there was only 141 vote difference, which is 0.30 of the total number of votes. So that triggers an automatic recount, and they'll be doing that tomorrow morning at the Supervisor of Elections office.
All right. So there's still, again, as we mentioned, it's not just the White House. There's still other things that have to be resolved. We're still counting. We're still going through the process, but it looks like everything operated smoothly. WLRN's Monroe County reporter Nan Klinginer. Always a pleasure, Nan. Thank you.
Thanks, Lewis.
All right. Still to come, we're going to take a look at Florida politics on the national context again as 2020 election season continues. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, regardless of the outcome of the presidential election, we know This has been a historic race on many levels. There were record levels, numbers of voter turnout in Florida and elsewhere around the country, with the coronavirus and the economy being the top issues that motivated the voters, that according to exit polls. And a lot of questions remain about the future of the GOP and the Democratic Party here in the Sunshine State. So let's talk about those. We have Broward College political science professor Kevin Walsh joining us again via Zoom. Kevin, great to have you back.
Hey, thanks very much. I really appreciate you asking me back.
Hey, so, I mean, all right, the election's not completely over, but, I mean, for you, what did you think about last night?
I thought it was historic on so many levels. At the Florida state level, think about just the turnout. You know, we had Miami-Dade, 76% turnout. That's unheard of, 74%. I think it was 74 in Miami-Dade, 76% in Broward County. So in Florida, incredible turnout. Kind of a surprise, though. I mean, 3.5% margin victory for Donald Trump. It looks like we're still waiting for some of the final tallies, but looks 3.5% in Florida is a landslide. Won 58 out of 67 counties, and it really was a tough night for Joe Biden in South Florida, particularly Miami-Dade.
What makes Florida, one of those states that, again, is always usually so close? Why?
Well, it's so diverse. There's such an incredibly diverse population. People of color, of course, there's the Latino population, very large, obviously, in South Florida, but across all of Florida. And again, you have the Cuban population, Cuban Americans, overwhelmingly strong support for Donald Trump. But you have some of the other Latino populations, Puerto Ricans and so forth, leaning more left Democrat. So you have a little bit of a split there. Certainly, Donald Trump had a better turnout and a better showing in South Florida among Cuban Americans. But that's just the ethnic dynamic in terms of the Latino vote. But you've got such an enormously diverse population demographically when it comes to other demographics as well.
What surprised you most about last night, and not just the presidential race, any of the races here in Florida?
Yeah, it was the large margin of victory in the state of Florida. But I don't know if there were any major surprises given the voting dynamics. You know, you see in Miami-Dade, a couple of congressional seats flipped. I don't know how much of a big surprise that was. Obviously, Carlos Jimenez defeating Debbie Mercosol Powell, and the 27th district, Maria Elvira Salazar defeating Donna Shalala. I don't know, maybe that was a little bit of a surprise given Donna Shalala's her presence in not only local but national politics.
You know, I've mentioned this a couple of times, which is a good thing. I mean, no hitches. I mean, it seemed like we got through this without any problems. There's no controversies. Nobody's talking about Florida today. They're looking at Michigan and Wisconsin and other states. We're not part of the problem. That's a good thing, right? I mean, what did we do? How did we finally fix the problem? Is that what we did?
What a pleasant surprise, right? But actually, I'm not too surprised. You know, Florida really did fix the problem. I think at the state level, you had, you know, Governor Scott at the state level, as well as the local supervisors of elections, I think really, and I'm talking about Governor Scott previously and some of the changes in Florida election dynamics. But I think Florida really took care of business last night. A lot of it has to do with the ability to tally votes, the mail-in and the early voting starting in October 15th. So by the time 7 o'clock came around, Florida was ready to go. So I think, yeah, Broward, Miami-Dade did great jobs with large turnout, very efficient, very effective, and pleasantly surprised with the Florida managing of the election last night.
You know, when you look at the polling data, the polls over the last couple of weeks doesn't really reflect what we saw actually happen in Florida last night. As a political science professor, how much stake do you put on national polling data?
You know, I tell you what, some of the polls were just absolutely, had an absolutely wrong. You had a few that stood out, actually, surprisingly. You know, Trafalgar, the Trafalgar group had some great polling. The Des Moines, Iowa Register poll, that was pretty solid and pretty indicative of what we're seeing. You know, a lot of people said the Trafalgar group that had it a lot closer than many of the national polls. They were, you know, they thought they were crackpots, but they ended up being far more accurate in predicting the outcome than some of the polling, some of the polling organizations and groups that had a rough night. Quinnipiac had a pretty bad night, and some of your Real Clear Politics averages, again, a lot of those polling organizations have to do serious rethinking about their polling models.
You know, when you look at this year, it was very strange because of the pandemic, and that played a big role in a lot of vote by mail and early voting coming in. Do you think it's just the pandemic that did that, or do you think that's the future of voting in Florida?
Well, that's a good question. You have this outlier situation with the pandemic, and it not likely to be repeated, although we certainly can't guarantee that. But with the COVID-19 situation, I think it's going to be a unique situation in this election. And I'm not so sure if we can look at trend lines based on what happened in this election. I know the Republicans would like to when it comes to the state of Florida. But again, the 2022 midterms is really going to be based on dynamics that you can't predict based on this election cycle.
If you were ahead of either party, why would Florida be important to you? Since it's always so close, why not? Wouldn't it be better to go and try to flip a state?
Absolutely. Well, you want to do both. Florida is the largest battleground state. It's 29 electoral votes. Republicans, I mean, Trump absolutely had to win Florida. And we see now that even with the win in Florida, he may very well fall short nationally, and it's looking more and more like that. So I think when you have a 29 electoral college count in a toss-up state, a battleground state, you've really got to put resources in to win it. And of course, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You've got to look to gain ground in other states. And I know the Democrats did a decent job. We'll see if they were successful. Obviously, they poured a lot of money into Georgia, a lot of money into North Carolina. Some of those Senate races against Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham. So I think the Democrats did do a lot of investing in trying to poach some Republican territory with mixed success, I might add, because we know Mitch and Lindsey Graham both won.
Yeah. And one other thing, too, is, look, we passed a couple of years ago Amendment 4, which gave voting rights back to felons. Then, of course, we saw the legislature, Florida legislature, say to those folks, well, you can, after you pay your fines and fees, some people call that a poll tax. There were some felons who were able to vote, not all. There was an effort to try to get more of them. Do you think that had any play in yesterday's election?
I don't think it would be significant. If we were going to look at it from a statistics standpoint, I don't think it was statistically significant at all. I think we probably have to wait to see the data coming out, the full breakdown of the data. But I'm not convinced at all that was statistically significant in this election.
All right. So again, you started your career here in Florida in 2000, the famous 2000 election. Where do you rank this one?
Wow, it was light years ahead of 2000, certainly in terms of competence and management of the election.
And
I think we got to give Florida a round of applause.
It's not over, by the way. That's the thing. It's not over. I mean,
it's far from over. I mean, we've got. I think Trump has a narrower path to victory. Biden has a pretty strong advantage. He's up in Michigan, Wisconsin. All he has to win is Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and he's going to take it with 270, even if Trump wins Georgia, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. It's an uphill battle for Donald Trump.
We're going to keep everybody informed on what's happening with the elections. We're following it. So just stay tuned to WLRN. I want to thank Broward College political science professor Kevin Walsh. Kevin, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
And again, he joined us via Zoom. All right, that's our program for this Wednesday, November 4th. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll tell you about the constitutional amendments that did pass last night, including the big one, the raising of the minimum wage and the changes to the homestead exemptions, and also the citizenship requirement for voting. Plus, University of South Florida political science professor emeritus Susan McManus will join us to discuss the potential for lawsuits to the presidential election results and, of course, the changing dynamics of Florida politics. Why not? Because it's an election week and we might not even have a final decision anyway. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and supporting this program. Tune in again tomorrow at 1 o'clock, tonight at 8 o'clock for the rebroadcast. Find us online at WLRN.org. Stay safe. Be good to each other. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.